huge issue for people. It is so gigantic. And fear encompasses so many different things. So I want to talk about fear from a perspective, number one, of for you to understand it, for you to be able to stare at it and see it for what it is. And then I also want to talk about it in a way of how do I overcome it, you know, because it's such a blockage in our lives. We let fear really just control us, and it's horrible when we give so much power to such a crazy word of fear. And fear, you know, results in so many things. We can be fearful for so many different things. We can be fearful of public speaking. We can be fear of asserting ourselves, making decisions, intimacy, changing jobs, being alone, aging, getting sick, driving, losing a loved one, ending relationships. We have so many fears about so many things. And when we have fear about things in advance of something happening, we fear it, and then we get into a state of worry, and we worry of endlessly about things that never ever happen, and it's just ridiculous, the whole cycle, and it just robs you of energy, and it gives you such negative thoughts and negative energy that we need to conquer this fear. We need to conquer it all across the board. And if we look at, I took two books, and one I've done before with some of you in the past, like 3-4 years ago, I did a piece around Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, because he talks about fear. Because he recognizes, too, even in the book Think and Grow Rich, he spends extensive time around the concept of fear, because that's what holds people back. And he goes, you can't run around this life having all this fear controlling your life. So he defines the first part of this, of the outline today, comes from Napoleon Hill, and then the second part of it comes from Susan Jeffers' Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And that's a terrific book. I mean, just an absolutely terrific book. And I'll talk, when I get to the end, hopefully I'll have a little time to tell you how to go through it, because it's not a book you can conquer in one sitting by any stretch of your wildest imagination. So how do we define fear? Fears are nothing more than states of mind. Will we all agree with that? A fear is a state of mind. And your state of mind is subject to control and direction. So if our state of mind is subject to control and direction, and fear is nothing more than a state of mind, what does that help you figure out right here and right up front in this talk today? That you can tackle fear. You have the power to tackle fear in your life, because your mind is subject to control and direction. So since you have the ability to completely control your mind and your thoughts, then you have you can step in and create a different reality for yourself. You can create a physical equivalency of it. Just like when you have worries and you have fears, your physical equivalency that you create is anxiety, adrenal failure, all sorts of things, rashes, hyperventilation. I mean, you create a physical equivalency of that by focusing on it. So if you control your thoughts to be positive and your thoughts to dismiss fear and overcome it, then you're going to create a different physical equivalency. You're going to have more self-confidence. You're going to be bolder. You're going to be braver. You're going to create greatness around you because you're dismissing these fears. And fear in and of itself, I love this acronym, and a lot of you have heard it before because it's pretty, it's been out there for years. The fear is nothing more than false expectations appearing real. False expectations appearing real. And some of you say, no, Mary Jo, my fear isn't false because I have all this credit card debt and I don't know how I'm going to overcome it, and I'm scared of, and I'm going, that's wrong. You're scared of something in the future. It's a false expectation appearing real. When you're afraid of something in the future, you're already giving it as if it's real. You're giving it as if it's a truth. You're giving it as a foregone conclusion. Nothing's a foregone conclusion. So don't fear. People say, oh, I fear being in poverty. Why do you fear that? That means you've given up control over your life. You're saying you have no control over making a difference in your life.
Excuse me, Mary Jo, you're really fading out at the end of some of your sentences.
I'm sorry. Is that better? Okay, I might move a little bit. Yeah, thanks for telling me. Thanks for the... Okay, so when you do that, so what you want to do is you don't want to give away the control of your life. And that's what fear does for you. You start giving your false expectations appear real. You start giving them a reality that doesn't exist. And then what happens is you end up creating that reality, even though it doesn't exist, but because you fear it so much and you focus on it so much, you create it. So we got to conquer fears. We have to conquer fears in our life. It's a mandatory thing that we must do and we must work on in order to achieve success. And that fear can be as simple as the fear of Mary Jo. I have a fear of approaching John because he's a successful businessman. Why do you fear it? Well, because he's going to reject me. You already have an expectation of what's going to happen, so you're giving up control of your life. You're saying, I don't have any control of creating a different result. Well, how ludicrous is that? It's ludicrous because you do have control over creating a different result. And it doesn't matter what's happened in the past. It's what are you going to do differently to create something different? It's kind of that same concept of insanity. You can apply it here. For things to be different, we have to do something differently. And so we get trained better. We take more concerted action. We make better decisions. We plan ahead a little bit better. We get, you know, teamwork done with three other people to get better coaching on it. And then we make a different approach, create a different result. And even if it does turn out to be the same result, at least you've learned a tremendous amount in the process, and now you've created even a higher level of esteem for yourself because you did it. I gave you this quote about fear out of Rick Warren's book because it's so powerful, and I love his writings, and I love Purpose-Driven Life. It's one of my top-ranked books. But he says, many people are driven by fear. Their fears may be results. It doesn't matter what they're results of, but he makes a laundry list. Fear can be a result of a traumatic experience, unrealistic expectations, growing up in a high-control household, or even genetic predisposition. Regardless of the cause, fear-driven people often miss great opportunities. And I'm going to say not often. Fear-driven people always miss great opportunities because they are afraid to venture out. Instead, they play it safe, avoiding risks and trying to maintain a status quo. Fear is a self-imposed prison that will keep you from becoming what God intends for you to be. That's one of my favorite ones. If you want to take one sentence out of that, take that one. Fear is a self-imposed prison that will keep you from becoming what God intends for you to be. You must move against it with the weapons of faith and love. The Bible says, well-informed love banishes fear. Since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment, fear of whatever, is one not yet fully formed in love. Huge comment. So let's get out of self-imposed prison. And self-imposed means you're choosing it. You get that? You're choosing it. So we need to start choosing different. Napoleon Hill goes further and talks about six most common fears that run our lives. One is fear of poverty. And this is a lot broader than just the fear of poverty. It gets into scarcity mentality, scarcity versus abundance. Fear of poverty, there are two roads to poverty and abundance. The two roads travel in opposite directions. So if you want abundance, you have to refuse any circumstances that lead to poverty. So choose abundance. Then you need to also choose a state of mind of abundance. You have to come from abundance. And I just did a power training around scarcity and abundance mentality, and the people in there move tremendously. Of course, they can't stop moving. They have to keep choosing in it every day, or they'll just fall back into old bad habits. But the important thing is they saw new light. They were enlightened by the price they pay for scarcity versus abundance mentality. So, and Napoleon Hill calls this the most destructive of all fears. Nothing brings more suffering to this world than poverty. And we also see behavior of mankind trying to overcome poverty. They involve an illegal activity, and we as a society risk our most valued asset of freedom just for the sake of wealth. So we see the sacrifices we're willing to make. We steal, we rob, we see what happens with people who are in poverty, who are so desperate for wealth. They compromise their very core value system, and they compromise their most valued asset, which is freedom. I can't ever imagine compromising my freedom. Ever. So some of us take the other side and we get a little paranoid about making sure we do everything right so that we don't want to be wrong, we don't want to make a mistake, we don't want to break the law in any way because we're not willing to sacrifice that freedom. But the bigger cost around scarcity, around fear of poverty to me is really that living a life in scarcity mentality that robs you and steals from you and drags you down like nothing else. And it's so contrary to Scripture. It's just so contrary. Self-evaluation will open up the possibility that this fear truly impacts your life. And And Napoleon Hill goes through like symptoms or recognizing symptoms of a poverty mentality or fear of poverty. And it doesn't have to be, you know, people can have a poverty mentality when they're multimillionaires. Does everybody get this? It's not, it doesn't have anything really to do with how much money you have in your bank account. Mother Teresa had maybe no money in her bank account, but she had the most abundant, you know, mentality, abundance mentality out there. It was never, there was never a worry in her life around her monetary position. Not a worry, not a concern, not a fear, none of that. It didn't exist. Fear of poverty didn't exist, so people can live in stark poverty and have zero fear of poverty. So look at self-evaluation, look at yourself and see if you suffer from some of those symptoms of that fear. Indifference is one. In other words, you have a lack of ambition or willingness to tolerate. You have a lack of ambition or you have a willingness to tolerate poverty. So you're indifferent about it. You don't care about creating something greater in your life, so you become indifferent. And people become indifferent because they set goals and the goals don't work out, so then they become indifferent. Apathetic is another word here. People lose their initiative, their imagination, their enthusiasm, and their self-control. That's what indifference is all about. They can be indifferent from the habit of allowing others to do your thinking, staying on the fence. So we can delegate. We let other people. We quit making decisions. We become indecisive, which is really what's here. Indecisive, allowing other people to do our thinking. Doubt. We allow alibis or excuses for failures. We become victim to other things that happen in our lives. Victim mentality. Worry, we usually express by finding fault with others. We tend to point our finger. It's easier to look at others and their inadequacies than look at our own because we don't want to work on our own. Overcaution, the habit of looking the negative side of everything, you know, that whole concept of the glass half empty instead of half full. And when you look at everything from the negative side, and you people can see people in your life that do this, I definitely can think of a few off the top of my head. You know, the secret, that whole movie and that whole series told us something about what we think of, as a man thinketh, so is he. What we think of, the power of our mind that we create that. That's why so many people say, Mary Jo, I'm going to listen to The Secret over and over again every day for the next 30 days. Great. I want you to feed your mind powerful things and positive things. Stay away from the negative and go. And some people say, well, Mary Jo, that's like living Pollyanna. I said, you know what? I want you to live your life Pollyanna. I want you to live your life Pollyanna. What is wrong with living your life Pollyanna? No matter how bad things, you know, you can look at the newspaper and let all this stuff internationally, what's going on in Washington, all this stuff, and you can let that all drain you if you choose it. But you know what? I don't let it drain me because I look at the positive of what's to come. I look at a future that has positive, a future of change. I look at a future of different things happening. I look at a future of what we can create. I come from possibility mentality. So, yeah, we can sit down and talk about and criticize what's happening now, but why stay in that arena? Move forward and be excited about the future. Come from solution orientation, not negative, or you'll create negative. And then another aspect of poverty mentality is procrastination. Putting off until tomorrow, that's what should have been done last year. Do you like that language? Not yesterday, but last year. Oh, my gosh. We'd love to do stuff like that. You know, we refuse to accept responsibility for things. And when you know, my motto in our place, as many of you know, is why put off till tomorrow what we can get done today? That's really how I run my office. That's how Lydia operates. That's how I operate. We just teach ourselves and train ourselves, and that's the way we move forward. And what an incredible thing. I mean, if you want to know how to create things in your life, adopt that as your motto. Why put off till tomorrow what I can get done today? And look at the difference. If you just ran your life, for some of you, maybe just take that motto and run this week exactly that way. Why put off till tomorrow what I can get done today? And watch how much you create and watch your effectiveness level rise. And then you're going to go, at the end of the week, you're going to be, I'm totally exhausted. Oh, my gosh. And I go, you know what? Then each day just create a little bit better. Kaizen. Every day make a little bit better. Develop a new standard, because for you to develop a new standard for yourself to get out of the bad habits you've created, you've got to really push yourself. You've got to accept change in your life. And then the last thing on the list about poverty mentality and fear of poverty is bargaining with life for a penny instead of harnessing the riches. I love that. In other words, what we end up doing is we settle. We settle for the bones. You guys are like a bunch of dogs in a pack out there, and you see there's a, you know, there's bones, and you love your bones. But you know what? Y'all want steak, but you're going to settle for bones. When are we going to quit settling in life? But Mary Jo, settling is so much easier. You know, I don't have to push myself out my comfort zone. I don't have to go out and talk to people I don't know. Great. So settle. So don't be what God's given you to be in life. So don't be, you know, feel fulfilled in your life. So allow that headstone to say, I regret I never worked hard enough to create what I really wanted in life. I lost my dreams at 8 years old and I never got them back. Oh, those are great headers for that headstone. Choice, people. It's just choices. So get out of that fear of poverty, fear of nothing, negative, the scarcity mentality. Huge. Eats us up alive and robs us from what we can be. The second fear is fear of criticism or fear of rejection. And we see fear of rejection all over the place in network marketing because that's one of the reasons people use as an excuse why they don't share. This kind of fear robs a person of his imagination and his initiative. As you know, your initiative. You fear rejection, so you don't go share. So it robs you of your initiative, so you don't move. So you stay stuck. So you settle for bones when steak's right around the corner. It limits your individuality. It takes away your self-reliance. So criticism and rejection have a major impact. Now I want to talk about criticism here a little bit because some of us don't always look at criticism. We think about rejection only when we talk about network marketing. But I want to tell you that I go out in the world and I hear a lot of criticism. I hear people whining about wah, 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 everywhere I go, this weekend at the regional. You know, I always have people come up and go, oh, Mary Jo, I loved your talk. My upline is wah, 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 wah. And I go, knock it off. Quit. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about the negativity that you have in your heart towards somebody else. Because when you criticize other people, like it's a two-way street. What do you feel like if people criticize you? Start thinking about that. If criticism, you know, is such a it's a disservice to people. When you get criticize people. Now, you can say to me, well, Mary Jo, but how do I help people and support them? Well, you know, I'm going to do a coaching mentoring class and talk about that. Because so many people don't get that. If somebody's doing something wrong, you don't criticize them. What you do is you start, the best way to tackle things like that is asking questions. Like, you know, Sarah, let me ask you a question. Do you think that's the best way that you could have tackled that problem? See the difference? Instead of saying, you know, Sarah, you're totally wrong. That is the worst thing you can do. Blah, 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 blah. Stop doing it. That's a telling way. If I'm going to really have this person come to a new awakening around how to do something different, wouldn't it be great if it could come from her instead of from me? And that's the way you coach and mentor people. So you stay away from criticism because criticism just robs. Asking questions, letting them come to their conclusion is incredible. The power of that is incredible. So, and it really moves people forward. So criticism plants fear in the human heart or resentment, but it will not ever build love or affection. And our role in this life, I always go back to it. I find it the hardest standard. If somebody says, Mary Jo, what's the hardest standard to live by in your entire life? You know what? My hardest standard to live by in my entire life comes right out of Scripture. And it's when Christ told us, he says, you love others as Christ loved you. We love others as Christ loved us. And if there's not a standard that's hard to live by, you tell me one that's tougher than that one. Wow. Powerful as that is. Because his love was just second to none. So how do we do that? And that's others. He didn't say specific others. He said others, meaning everyone. Everyone. Love others as Christ loved you. Okay, there's your standard. So does that involve criticism? I don't think so. Does it involve support?
Excuse me, Mary Jo, you're starting to fade out again at the end of those sentences. You're doing great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, so you understand that it involves us really pouring into people and really, you know, giving them and staying out of that criticism realm and giving them support and empowering them to see the results of their own behavior. Okay, so that's fear, criticism, rejection, symptoms of this fear, the fear of rejection, fear of criticism. Of course, we all know what that is because we've seen it around our Mantic business when we fear approaching certain people and we fear of getting rejected. We become very self-conscious. So the focus is wrong because when we're self-conscious, where's the focus? On us instead of them. So get the focus off of you and get rid of that self-consciousness. So, you know, and self-consciousness is expressed in all sorts of different ways, nervousness, timidity in conversations, awkward movement. We have a lack of poise, our personality. We lack firmness in our decision-making, and we lose our boldness. We feel inferiority complex, the ability to express self-approval by words and actions by means of covering up. We do all sorts of, we play games with ourselves. We use big words to impress others. We fall into traps around that instead of coming from authentic and real. We lose all of that. When we have a fear of rejection, we start coming from somebody other than who we are. We try to be something other than who we are. We also play the game of keeping up with the Joneses. That comes from fear of rejection, fear of criticism. We don't want our neighbors thinking that we're not as good as they are, so we've got to keep up with the Joneses. So we have that whole crazy stimulus in our life that's so unsubstantiated and wrong, right? And then we don't embrace opportunities. We take lack of initiative and lack of ambition come out of a fear of rejection. We get mental and physical laziness enter our lives, which don't serve any of us. And remember, when you don't serve you, you don't serve anyone else either. I always look at people and I say, you know, when you rob from yourself and you don't fulfill your life, you're really robbing from all of us, because we as a society are only as good as our weakest link. So if we don't help support those people be better, and if you don't fulfill your purpose in life, you're really robbing from everybody else around you because of what you could have created if you just would have stepped into it. Okay, the next fear, third fear, is fear of ill health. The fear may be traced to both physical and social hereditary. It could be a lot of reasons why we fear ill health. Well, hypochondria, we have a lot of people around us that are hypochondriacs. I came across another one this past weekend. But so we have this fear of ill health that can overwhelm us as well. And again, recognizing the power of our mind, we can either create things with our mind or destroy things, including our own health. We can destroy with our mind. In fact, if you read the books around health and healing processes, you'll find out that they show that between 80 and 90% of all of our healing that occurs starts with the mind first. So if we believe we're going to be well, we will be well. If we believe we're going to be sick, so we have the fear of sickness, then we create sickness. And people who have cancer, they did a study on that too. They found that the people that are successful fighting cancer are the ones that believe that they're going to beat it. They put the belief in their head. They truly grab onto it and hold onto it, and they just run with it. They believe they will overcome it. So it's important that we look at the fear of health and what it creates for us, and how we lose so much because of our fear of ill health. We can lose love, we can lose business opportunities, we can lose everything. The symptoms of that fear is kind of like auto-suggestion is one that he said. Basically, we jump on every therapeutic fad that comes out. So we talk a lot about illnesses. My sister was, you know, right in this. In fact, one of the first things when she was going through her split up with her husband a year and a half ago, one of the first conversations I had with my sister was, I will not listen to you talk about illness. You will not say a thing. And I told her, I said, that's one of the things that probably was more impactful on your divorce than anything else, is that all you wanted to do is focus on your sicknesses and illnesses. I mean, what does that do? It's just a horrible thing. It's just negative for self-suggestion, and it just wears out. Anyone in your environment just wears them down. It just wears because it's always negative. It's always negative. Hypochondria, we talked about. That's the habit of talking about illnesses all the time, fearing something's going to work, happen to you, something's going to break out, I'm worried about the bird flu, I'm worried about the frog flu, I'm worried about the snake virus, come on, jeez, enough already. Exercise, fear of ill health often interferes with physical exercise. People are overweight. Fear about physical exercise. Oh, it's going to hurt me. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. It's going to cause this. All sorts of things. So we get away from exercise. Self-coddling, habit of making a bid for sympathy with everybody. Again, that's the negative. You don't go out in this world and look for sympathy. You go out in this world and you give empathy. You want sympathy, you give empathy. You want love, you give love. And then we also use other things, like we get into bad habits, drugs, alcohol, those kind of things, intemperance around our illness because of that. Instead of eliminating the cause of our issues, we use drugs and alcohol and other pharmaceutical drugs to destroy things instead of eliminating cause. And we can all agree with that because we all come from a Manatech mindset that we go after cause of illness. Okay, fourth fear is a fear of a loss of love, and we go through a ton of things. Jealousy, similar forms of neurosis grow out of our inherited fear of loss of love. Symptoms of the fear are jealousy, fault-finding, gambling. These kind of things come up out of our fear of love, and it can paralyze you just as much as any other fear. A fear of being alone. A lot of people have that fear. It exists out there. And we become, you know, accusatory. We lose faith in people. We lose friendships over it. It's all, it's crazy. It grabs us and just grabs a hold of us and robs us of breath. The fifth fear is a fear of old age. Sometimes this fear ties into the fear of poverty because we fear old age will bring us into poverty. We won't have enough. There's so many people, especially baby boomers today, I hear talk about they won't have enough. And they go, oh, you know, I'm worried about it. And I go, again, what are you worried about? Why don't you do something about it? Why don't you look at yourself in the mirror and say, I was created in God's image. Why am I not tackling this problem? Tackle it right now instead of wallowing in the fear. Fear robs you of moving. And you know, the ultimate thing, especially for those of you on this call who are Christians, you know one thing for sure, that God is your provider. So many of these fears, every time I do this and I do research on this and I read about it, I always, in my heart of heart, my heart aches deeply because we as a society who call ourselves such strong Christians out there, and then we live in fear, and it's so totally inconsistent with our Christian values. It's totally inconsistent. Even from a political realm, when I see, you know, in George Bush, the strong Christian, and he's talking about fear, 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 and he runs his campaign on fear and fear and fear. And what has it done in our society? What has this fear done? It's made people paranoid. It's made people have hatred. People marching. Somewhere they had a Six Flags or somewhere where they had, I think it was here in Dallas or in Arlington, where they had a Muslim day. And these people came and marched on the Muslim day, and they were a group of people that were against hatred in the world. And they're marching on Muslim Day. And I'm looking here going, well, what's the marching coming from except hatred towards the Muslims or dislike, disdain for the Muslims? I mean, is this a catch-22 or what's going on here? I mean, we get this attitude to it. I have some great Muslim friends who I adore. They don't hate us. You know, but but the fear that we're instilling in people and all this stuff that we do, it's so contrary. It's so, there's nothing that in Scripture that supports us on this amount of hatred and this fear that we have. So we paralyze ourselves. So fear of old age, fear of poverty, fear of these things. Again, we slow down. We don't think we have enough. The Lord's your provider. Oh, I don't believe that, Mary Jo. Oh, yes, I do, because I read it's in the Bible. But you know what? I still am going to worry and have fear about being provided for. Okay, great. So I read the Bible. I believe it, but I really don't believe it. So let me just live my life not believing it. Okay, your choice. It causes me great pain and great agony in my heart when I see people operate like that. And the fear of death is another one. A fear of death generates from many sources. But the most common source is, and now remember, Napoleon Hill wrote his book back in the 1920s, this book is 30s, and so this book is old. But back then, the most common thought was eternal punishment. So I really don't think that's a fear of death that exists in our society. I think that our society has gone a different direction from that. I think that's when there was more of a greater Christian movement, perhaps, or more of a condemnation versus, you know, belief, you know, choice there. Today we have so many theories and so many movements out there about life after death and all sorts of things that I don't think that people walk around fearing eternal punishment or living, or what I would say, living in hell. But I think people fear death because they feel that they never achieve fulfillment. I think there's more of a lack of fulfillment. They fear death because they never accomplished what they would have liked to accomplish in their life. They haven't, you know, fulfilled their life as they should have, so they fear death. So rather than going out and fulfilling their life as they should have, they rather spend their time wallowing and worrying and fearing death. So, you know, let's just make the most out of life. Because fear of death loses, grabs your purpose, your direction, your legacy, all those kind of things. You lose all of that. So if you look at those six fears, those are the fears that he says paralyze us in most situations. How do you overcome them? How do we overcome our fears? How do we take these fears and cast them to the wind? And that's Susan Jeffers' book, and I really highly recommend it for everybody to get it. And the way you tackle this book is you tackle it one chapter at a time. It's like eating an elephant. You tackle a chapter and you put it down and you tackle that chapter for the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then maybe you pick it back up again and you tackle the next chapter. Her book is very intense. It covers a ton of information. I could give a talk on every chapter. In fact, probably, you know, I could probably give a talk, a Monday training, you know, 3 or 4 trainings on each chapter alone just by breaking apart her chapters. But we're going to try in the next, you know, 10 minutes to go through her book in a summary format. So let me run through the principles behind it. And then again, high suggestion that you all go out there and get that. Because even if you don't feel like you fit in any of these, I can even, you know, I feel myself as being, you know, really fearless as a person. But, you know, there are things that creep in my life from time to time. And I need to know how to tackle them when they creep in because they're just stealing from me. And I don't want anything robbing from me. I don't want anything robbing away my effectiveness. So if I have a tool that I can use to help support that, I'm going to use that tool. So fear paralyzes. First of all, you need to examine your own fears. Find, you know, take a real look at yourself. Spend some introspective time evaluating where are your fears. And the ones I listed today, of course, are the 6 most common ones, but there are many fears. You know, we can talk about public speaking or asserting yourself. The things I read off at the beginning of the book, you know, there's just a lot of different things that we fear. Because, you know, natural disasters, we fear change. We fear, you know, all sorts of things. We fear, you know, making decisions. We fear a lot of things, being interviewed, driving, losing weight. We fear asserting ourselves, going to the doctor. We fear. All these things are fear. So there are 5 truths about fear, and this is laid out in Jeffers' book. It's great. And acknowledge each one of these as they apply to your own fears that you have. Number one, fear will never go away as long as you continue to grow. A hard thing for people to stomach, but the reality of it, what she's saying here is saying that as much as you conquer fear, if you truly are out in this world to fulfill a purpose, you're going to constantly be doing what? You're going to constantly be breaking through your comfort zone and stretching out and growing. And every time you stretch out beyond that comfort zone, there's going to be things that are totally new to you that are going to trigger a level of fear. It doesn't mean there'd be big fear, but because they're just the fact that you're walking away from first base to try to get to second base and you're no longer tagged up, you're going to feel a little sense of fear because you're going to be undertaking a risk, and risks generate fear. But Susan says you've got to acknowledge it, that you're going to always live with fear in your life in some way, shape, or form if you continue to grow. But see it and work through it anyway. Number 2 says the only way to get rid of fear of doing something is to go out and do it. Isn't that a great concept? Duh. If you fear of doing something, how do you overcome it? Do it. Just do the thing that you have fear over. And the same thing applies to the way you feel about yourself, which is number 3, the 3rd truth about fear. The only way to feel better about yourself is to go out and what? And do it. Go out and do it. If you want to feel better about yourself by accomplishing something, you raise your self-confidence. You feel better about yourself. Number 4 is not only are you going to experience fear when you are in unfamiliar territory, so is everyone else. So the important thing is to say, I'm not alone out here. Everybody else has same and similar fears that I have, so don't feel like you're such a loner and no one else has to go through what you're going through. Everybody goes through fears. And the last one is the one that's so incredible. Pushing through fear is less frightening than living with the underlying fear that comes from a feeling of helplessness. So it's a cost-benefit analysis. When you let fear control your life and you fail to push through it, then you're accepting failure. At least by pushing through the fear, you're accomplishing something. So don't stay in the helpless state. Don't stay in all the, remember the characteristics and symptoms of the fears we read through Napoleon Hill's book. Don't stay stuck in that stuff. It's all negative. It robs you. Feel the fear and blow through it because that's 10,000 times better than staying stuck. So those are five truths about fears. If you get those five down, boy, that can change your life just by reemphasizing those or reading through those every day of your life. I'm telling you, because they're so powerful. Susan goes further to say the basis for all fear is one thing. I can't handle it. If you look at all those fears, public speaking, making a mistake, intimacy, losing a loved one, accidents, rape, rejection, success, failure, being vulnerable, being conned, helplessness, disapproval, loss of image, all that stuff. What is it? It's because I can't handle it. So when you want to establish in your life is an affirmation to support yourself, to believe in you, I can handle it. Strike the word I can't from your total vocabulary. I can't remember using the word can't. You know? I mean, if somebody asked me to pick up a 5,000-pound ball, I would look at them and say, I'm not interested in doing that. It's not that I can't do it, it's just that I won't do it. I won't even attempt to do it because it's so ludicrous. I mean, it becomes ludicrous. But it's not about I'm not able. I don't start limiting myself. It's something that I'm not willing to do. I won't do it because it doesn't make any sense to me to try to tackle something like that. You know, so it's a different thing. So I get rid of the word I can't from your vocabulary. Get rid of it. So I put an affirmation in the outline today. I am powerful, and I am loving, and I have nothing to fear. And what do most people say? I have nothing to fear but fear itself. Who said that? Wasn't that Roosevelt? We have nothing to fear but fear itself, because fear is what destroys us. So we have nothing to fear. So that's what you write an affirmation around that, right? And some of you are going, well, Mary Jo, the Bible says we're to fear God. Well, a fear of God is an awe. It's a respect. It's not I'm scared. It's an awe and a total respect and an honoring verb in the Bible. So I'm not suggesting that you don't follow Scripture. I'm suggesting that you have nothing to fear. And when he tells us that with perfect love we have no fear, now maybe you understand what he means by fearing him versus when you have perfect love, you have no fear. Okay, another one that she talks about is monitoring our vocabulary. Rid all of our negative and victim language. She gives a whole risk a day. Here's another great technique to overcome fear. Put yourself out at least once a day. Take a risk every day. Just take a risk. Why? Because it broadens your comfort zone. Every time you take a risk, you're pushing out your comfort zone another inch, another quarter inch. You can do a drawing, and you can just see how your comfort zone expands every time you take a risk. And it also reinforces, I can handle it, instead of I can't. Take responsibility for your life. Choose actions that grow you. Can I tell you here, and she has a great chapter on this I love, too, because I so believe it. People ask me sometimes, they say, Mary Jo, I'm not. I take responsibility for my life. And I go, oh, really? I said, when was the last time you were frustrated? And they go, oh, just today, this morning, I got frustrated because of my husband. And I said, boom, there you go. Signs you're not responsible for your life. Our anger, frustration, upset, blaming others, pain, lack of focus, self-pity, envy, helplessness, constant state of limbo. Some of you don't even want to read the rest of this list because you're going, Mary Jo, that's me. You're describing me. I want you to quit letting it be. Quit choosing into it. Get rid of these things in your life. Ugh, they just are awful. They're just all negative. They're just all negative words. They're all negative energy. They're negative emotion. They just are all... And you go, well, how can you not be angry? And somebody... You know, runs you off the road, how can you not be angry? Because why? Why? First of all, they ran me off the road, which was very threatening to my physical being, and now you want me to give them control over my emotions as well? You want me to give them control over my emotional state? Is that what you're telling me? Think about it, people. They threaten me physically, and I'm supposed to be angry and go crazy about somebody who and give him control over my emotion after he almost killed me. Well, that sounds like common sense. Not. The reality is if somebody forces me off the road and I'm pushed off the road and I pull my car over and whatever happens, and, of course, you immediately have this incredible feeling of, like, oh, my gosh. You know, I mean, it's just a sense of just shock. But the first thing that should come to your head as you train yourself to be a responsible human being is, oh, thank you, Lord. And you come from total gratitude. You're still breathing. I still have my life. What an incredible miracle. Thank you, Lord. What a blessing. Now, some of you are going, Mary Jo, that's almost impossible. I mean, come on, be real. And I'm telling you, it's not impossible. It's totally possible. And it's totally where we need to be. It's totally how we need to live our life. I give you, it's a dramatic experience for you to really look at and say, how would you react to that experience? And your goal should be that you would react in a sense of gratitude and love and caring and thankfulness instead of one of anger, frustration, and I'm going to go after that guy. I'm going to get his license plate. I'm going to get retribution. I'm going to get revenge. Where do I vomit next? What does any of that stuff do for you? How does it support you in being the quality person? It doesn't. So there you go. How do I know I'm taking responsibility for my life and I'm being able to respond? Remember the word responsible, able to respond. Isn't that an incredible way of looking at it? So take a peek at that. Great topic. That's a great one we could do. Stop any negative thoughts. Always be positive. We know about the secret. Surround yourself with positive and supportive people. You got to do that, people. I know it's hard. Some of you are married to people that aren't very supportive, but, you know, then you've got to go back and look at F and say, take responsibility. Don't let them control your emotions. But, you know, surround yourself. Get positive people around you. I have some terrific people in my organization who I can look at them and say, I'd love to spend the rest of my life around these people because they're so cool. They just are so positive and so supportive. And then I have other people and I say, wow, okay, Lord, I get why you have them in my life. This is where I need to really do the pouring. And I do the pouring. But, you know, I surround myself with positive people. And even the people, you know, when I first hired Lydia, she wasn't a very positive person. She lived in total fear. She had fear of, the first thing she said to me as she drove into town to come take this job and work with me was she said, well, in the car, can you imagine calling Mary Jo and this is your new boss and you're going to come work with her. And when she said, well, what if it doesn't work out? I almost came unglued. I mean, totally unglued. I'm listening to this and I'm going, Lydia, look at you're living your life in fear. You're worrying about something that isn't even going to happen. And you're worrying about the future and you're going to create it. You're going to make it not happen. You're going to make it not work out. As long as you worry about it, that's what you'll create. I said, isn't it funny? I have never, ever looked at any job in my life thinking, what if it doesn't work out? Oh, here she comes. She's going to give me a hard time because she doesn't like it when I talk about that. She just squeezed my head. Anyway, but it's incredible how we, you know, and that's where she was when she first started with me. She just yelled, I'm not there anymore. You know, but does it take time for us to overcome that? Absolutely. But first you have to acknowledge that it's running your life, and then you have to say, okay, I'm sick and tired of letting this stuff run my life. So get rid of negative thoughts. Be positive. Always look at things as positive. Surround yourself with positive people. So I had Lydia. She wasn't very positive. So what did I need to do? I needed to work with her every day of her life. 3.5 years later, I have a very positive person who works with me, which is terrific. She's lost a tremendous amount of her insecurities and her fears and all those things and is supportive to get her to be in that position. And that's what you need to do. Surround yourself with positive people. And if you have people who aren't, then help support them becoming positive people. Before making a decision, understand the no-lose model. And the no-lose model is really one that you can't lose. You know, a lot of you guys you can't make a decision. You get froze in a position because you can't make a decision because you're afraid of making a mistake. Well, the no-lose model is that you can't lose. Look at every decision you make as there's no possibility of losing. In other words, even if the decision you make turns out not to produce the result that you thought, it's a tremendous lesson that you've learned, so it's all positive. It's win-win. Every decision is win-win. And she's got a great chapter around that. Say yes to the universe no matter what happens in your life. In other words, you get in a car accident, you lose a leg, you're in a wheelchair the rest of your life. You know what you do? You say yes to the world. Yes, universe. There's a purpose behind all of this. It's always a yes. Whatever happens, my brother shot and killed by his wife, and I needed to say yes to the universe. And 16-year-old, bring him in my house and build the best possible life for those two kids because they were really important. I said yes to the universe. And look what you create. Two kids graduating from college, doing great, loving life, loving, you know, visiting their mom in prison, have a relationship with her today. You know, great, strong Christian kids, love the Lord. Say yes to your universe. Say yes to what happens in your life. Choosing love and trust. To love is to serve, is to give. Learning to give. You know, a lot of us give with expectation of getting, and that's wrong. You never should give with expectation of getting, because then you're always going to be in a world of frustration because you're going to have expectations that aren't met. So, and you're going to feel the world doesn't treat you fairly. So you want to learn how to do unconditional giving. Unconditional giving. Okay? And then the next one is operating from your spiritual side. And I'll close with that. That's Susan's last chapter is talking about your spiritual side, coming from your higher self, whatever that is for you. For me, of course, it's God. And in my Christian walk, and when I walk with Him, I know my life is so unbelievably filled with all the fruits of joy, the fruits of security, the fruits of every fruit is present when I walk with Him. And when I place myself in that position, which I do every day, through prayer, through constant reinforcement, through Bible study, through whatever it is, and for whatever that is for you, that higher self, when you operate from that higher self, you feel centered and you feel the abundance that's available there. And when you're walking in that walk, you know what, people? Your fears automatically disappear. Very much tie that back to what Rick Warren says at the beginning of the outline. So when you have a life that's fully formed in love, you have no fear. And that's the truth. It's that living with that higher self, being that higher self, walking in that walk. Okay, great. So that's the end of our talk today. Anyone have any feedback, any comments from the audience? I know we went a little over. We tend to do that. Anyone? You guys have some fears they need to tackle that you really can see, that open your eyes to some of the things in your life?
Mary Jo, I tell you, I think this is probably the most powerful training that I've had in such a long time.
Great.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You betcha, you betcha, you betcha. Anyone else? Okay, then I'll leave you with one thought. And oh,
Mary Jo, can you hear me?
Thank you.
You
thank
bet.
You for this material.
You bet. Who,
Mary Jo?
Rod? Yeah?
Hi. It was amazing training. I could see so many different things in the training where fear was just holding me back. And I think that the Susan Jeffers material would be awesome to do an ongoing training like you were talking about, you know, taking each chapter and breaking it down over a series of training around that.
Yeah.
So that really
Roz is just saying that she thinks that she loved the material. I can't hear you, Roz, for some reason, but she just said she loved the material, but she really thinks that maybe tackling Susan Jeffers' book and really going after it chapter to chapter would help a lot of people. Do you guys feel the same way?
Probably so.
Absolutely. Yes, yes.
Really great. Really
yeah? Because you feel like, I mean, this is something that hits home. Okay, so give me some feedback. Send me some emails. Give me some feedback because, you know, if we want to tackle this, there's other ways of tackling it. I can do a separate power training on it, or I can actually do it on the Monday calls. Whatever your feel is for it, I will support you in that because I really, truly believe that this is at the core of what keeps us stuck in where we are. And if we can just tackle that fear and go, you know, develop habits around it to really release it from our lives, oh my gosh, you guys will just be out there with that, like I said, breathing every breath every day of being in that state of abundance and joy and just, you know, fulfillment. And that's where I want you to be. I want you to live and breathe every day of your life coming from that arena. Okay?
Mary Jo, this is your topic. Yesterday, I was having sort of an epiphany on fear, and I came to realize that I understand that, you know, love overcomes fear, perfect love casts out fear, but that some of the fear in my life, I'm not aware that I have a fear about something.
Right.
You know, the fear is it's like an unknown. I don't realize that that's a fear, a sort of one of the fears that's going forward, but you don't recognize it as a fear that's in the middle, that's mm-hmm. keeping me. And this yeah. teaching today kind of brought out a lot of those things, so I really appreciate that,
you know,
identifying the fear.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's why we look at what are the symptoms of the different fears, because sometimes we don't look at things that are happening in our life as fear-based because they don't sound like they're a fear. You know, when somebody talks to me about scarcity mentality, they don't think scarcity mentality is a fear-based, and it's at the heart and core is fear. You get it? So we look, there are a lot of things that we give different words to, but they're really the heart and core of what creates it is a fear. It's underlying it is a fear. And that's why, you know, even Susan Jeffers, she says, one of the first steps you want to do is examine your own. You want to take a look at what is it that's in me and do that self-introspection to really tackle it. Because if you don't see it as a fear, if you don't have the self-awareness, it gets back to what I always tell people. The most incredible growth that comes in your life is getting to know the things you don't know. Getting to know the things that you don't know. The things you don't know that you don't know are the areas of your life where you're going to have the greatest growth. The things you don't know, you don't know.
Really?
That's where your greatest growth in your life will occur. Now, that's really twisting some of your brains this morning, but think about it and you'll start opening up to it. Because that's when you listen to a training like this morning and you go, wow, I never thought about that. Well, there's something you didn't know that you didn't know because you never looked at it. It's a way of, you're looking at something totally differently and you never knew that you didn't know it because it never came out for you. It was a new way. It's like getting a set of new eyes to look at things differently, and that's where your greatest growth will occur in your life. Greatest growth in things you don't know that you don't know. You guys all say, well, I know about this, Mary Jo, all I got to do is implement it. Well, the problem is that your growth is going to occur when you find the things you don't know, which is what's behind it, what's truly holding you back, how you need to change instead of the way you think you need to change. Because if you just implemented what you think you need to change, you could have been doing that for 25 years and you haven't been doing it. So what is it about you don't know that's keeping you from doing that? That's where your growth occurs. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, there's a barn burner for you. Okay, I love you guys. And we
Thanks.
Will look at that. Rod, send me an email about what... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
See you Thursday.
See you Thursday. Oh, am I going to see some people Thursday?
Oh, Saturday.
I'm going to see a lot of you Saturday on the boat. So understand that we're going to be on the boat next week because of the Mexican Riviera trip, which is so exciting for all of us that get to go. And for those of you who don't get to go, next year is your year. Anyway, and most importantly is that we will have a call next Monday. Jack Lacey will be doing the call, and I don't know that we've picked a topic for it yet, but we'll get that out to you. So there will still be a Monday call, even with us being on the boat. I love you all. Have a great week, and talk to you soon. Bye.
Safe travels. Bye.
You too, Mary Jo. Thank you.
The moderator has disconnected.